before we begin this episode, I want to give a shout out to all my patrons on Patreon who make this podcast possible, especially Mirna, Julianne, Scarlett, Jasdeep, and Juno. If you want to support this podcast, feel free to become my Patreon on patreon.com/queerchicanochisme, and let's start the show.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live!
Fuck it!
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. I am one of your hosts, Ruben.
And I'm Cassandra.
Wow, you always...
Hi, bitches.
What's up, bitches? You always, like, bitches? Pause, like, you forget, like, who am I?
I think about that every day.
Aww.
I didn't even know, I was just telling Ruben that I didn't know how old I was, really, until a month ago. So this whole time, I've been telling everyone that I'm 27. And I thought that I was going to be 28 next month, but apparently I'm 28 and I'm going to be 29. And so it feels like I lost a year of my life.
Damn. So now you're going to have to do all the things in this month that you didn't do because you thought you were 27. So I know I'm 28 now. I thought you were 29 and I thought you were going to be 30.
You were... You're like, when are you going to be 30? I'm like, wow, okay.
Well, I thought, you know, that this was like a cross-generational thing, right, that you're having.
No.
Right?
No.
We're the same generation, just a couple months apart. What was I going to say? Yeah, no, so what I did during year 28 thus far is, like, you know, quit a job. I was depressed a lot, so you still have a month to, like, fit, like, a lot of...
I did that. I just did that. I actually... actually lost my job last month and I've actually been very sad about it. So yeah, so I guess that's what 28 is like. Heads up to everybody. When you sad year.
Are you in your return of Saturn officially?
I have no idea.
What?
I guess maybe.
Fake we'll astrology.
I'm so fake. We'll have to figure that out. But it's been shitty. I feel like I didn't, like, you know, last year it was, like, 2016, and it was, like, the worst year ever for everybody, and then, like, I felt like this year, like, 2017, like, a lot has happened, not just, like, in my life, but, like, political, like, with this administration, like, a lot of shit has happened, and I feel like maybe so much has happened that I didn't have time to actually sit and think about, like, how fucked up it was, because it was, like, constantly reacting to, like, all this shit, especially here also, like, locally with the community organizing that we're doing. And so, like, now that I feel like I've had time to, like, actually sit down and reflect, also because I don't have a job, so I don't do anything. So I just, like, think about how sad everything is. So I'm like, wow, this year has been, like, wild.
Yeah, like, and your birthday's, like, in mid-November, right? So, like, last year you were, like... mid, like, recovery after the election, so you might have, like, just been, like, blanked it out of your mind, your memory.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So it's wild too that it's already the end of the year. I know everyone says that every time it's the end of the year, but it it really just came out of nowhere. I'm like, wow, like, we have 2 months left of 2017. Wild. Yeah, like, next week is Halloween. What are you going to be for Halloween?
I'm going to be a unicorn. I'm going to be a gay-ass unicorn. I showed her my costume, and she was like, you look like a little EDM kid. And I'm like, thanks, I'm going to a Kesha concert.
I love it. It makes sense. I love it that it's a Kesha concert. Like, if you were not going to a Kesha concert, I'd be like, bye.
I originally wanted to be a dinosaur, but I couldn't find any, like, glittery dinosaur costumes. And I wanted to be, like, glow-in-the-dark or glittery, just to show bitches up.
Aww.
And I think it's the way that we ascribe gender to dinosaurs, you know? Like, we think they're all aggressive.
My baby's going to be a dinosaur.
Aww.
So, and I thought, like, this year, I was like, I have one more year to pick out his costume for him before he's able to be, like, nah. Yeah. And then this year he was like, I want to be a dinosaur.
Oh!
And so, like, he picked it himself, so he's going to be a dinosaur.
Oh.
So That's exciting. But I was telling Ruben, growing up, I wasn't allowed to celebrate Halloween. It was like the devil. Mm-hmm. And so now that I'm older, as I got older, like I just can't get into it. Like I really try to be like, yeah, Halloween. And I can't.
Yeah. But,
I mean.
So one thing that I love to tell people is that like, okay, so like we were like whatever about Halloween, right? We got to dress up until like I was in second grade. And that was like the last time I remember dressing up was, yeah, second grade. And I was like a Power Ranger. And it was the first time my parents allowed me to like dress myself in school, right? So they sent me like, they were like, you were sending you with your costume. So when it's time for the parade, like you dress yourself. And so I did, but I didn't know that like your costume was supposed to be your clothing. So I put my costume over my uniform and like I was just like this little like stuffed albondiga of Power Ranger. Like I was like bursting out of my costume. And I was just like, oh, I just gained weight. It's okay. Because, you know, I'm hella body positive since I was little. But yeah, no. But after that, we just got really religious. And so one thing that I tell my friends is that, like, so while you were out trick-or-treating, I was inside of my house praying for your soul. Right? So we used to pray the rosary. And whenever they would knock on our door trick-or-treating, we would pray harder. Because my mom thought, hasta el diablo, hasta el diablo.
My mom would just like turn off the lights, yeah, and then sometimes she would want to pass out like those little like booklets.
No,
I've never seen them. They're like little book. They're like
prayer.
I don't
handbooks?
Know. They're just like they're not prayer handbooks. They were like little booklets that had stories of sin. I don't know. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that. Like, just turn off the lights. I'd rather just like. And then like when it. On occasion, like, the church that we attended would have, like, instead of going trick-or-treating, like, you can bring your kid to a party at the church. So it was kind of, like, better than staying home.
Yeah.
But it was still, like, you can't dress up.
Oh, yeah. We had,
you can just...
We had that, too. And we got to dress as saints, I remember. Did y'all do that?
No, that's weird. Was it Catholic?
Yeah, we were a Catholic church.
Was it a Catholic? Okay, no, this was, like, Christian.
Oh, y'all don't
so I don't
have
even know the
time.
Difference. No, those are the devil, too. Just like the Virgin Mary.
Oh, my God. We're deleting that from the podcast. We did not call the Virgin Mary anything.
The Catholic Church and everything that had to do with the Catholic Church in my house was the devil itself, too.
Damn, drama.
So, yeah.
So we were... A lot more tolerant of other... No, we weren't. We were pieces of shit, too. My families made fun of Christians all the time. They were like, yeah, they don't have the Virgin of Guadalupe. Like, uncultured swine.
They're like, fake.
Seriously, they were like, Nuestra Patria, Nuestra Madre de la Patria. Like, how dare you not worship her? Where's your rosary, sinner? Right? So... No, yeah, so we used to pray the rosary really hard on Halloween. But then when I got to high school, what?
I'm just laughing, like, of you and your family, like, sitting together praying every time the doorbell rang.
Yeah, no, we would pray harder when it rang. It was something else. And then I remember that in high school, like, I would, like, I found ways to, like, buy my own shit. And so I would, like, buy my costume on the low and put it in my backpack. And then when I got to campus, I would, like, dress up. And so, because I was, like, I wanted to partake in the fun, because all my friends were always just, like, really about Halloween, so I became about mm-hmm. it, too. And then now as an adult, like, I took a few years off, but, like, I'm, like, I want to do this again. I didn't do it last year. I didn't do it last year. Not really. The last few years of me been taking my nieces and nephews out, my nibblings out for trick-or-treating, and that's kind of been, like, us, like, fixing our historical trauma, like, our... Right, like our family trauma, by not inflicting it on our kids this generation, and so they get to do out the whole thing, and so we make it big for them now. Yeah,
that's how I feel. Like I take Luca trick or treating. This is gonna be his fourth year trick or treating. He's only four, but mm-hmm. since like he was months old, like 4 months old, his first Halloween, like I dressed him up like every year, and so he mm-hmm. really really likes Halloween.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. Cute.
What are you gonna be, bitch?
I'm not gonna be anything. I'm telling you. I always have like ideas, but they just I just never. I don't know. I'm also like, I don't know. I just feel weird, like, dressing up and going somewhere, because I feel like everyone's going to stare at me. But that's how I feel all the time. I don't like when people stare at me. Anyway. Anyway.
So, yeah, so, you know, so shit's been going on with us, but shit has also been going on with the world, right? These are, you know, we live on the worst timeline, I think. And, you know, there's no easy... So before we continue, we want to, you know, we want to add trigger warnings for discussions of sexual assault. We will be discussing some of these things, not graphically, but we will be touching upon them. So just if you need to check out, right, if you need to turn us off, right, like, you can come back next episode. We won't hold it against you. But we think that, like, it's important to talk about that, especially as folks who make survivor advocacy, like, part of their work. And we decided that, like, today would be a good time to talk about that. And honestly, we should always be talking about that. We should normalize talking about surviving, right? And we should also normalize talking about consent. And we should normalize adding trigger warnings as well for people who, like, don't always want to engage these conversations, right? Because, you know, we all have our different processes for these things, right? So this week, we wanted to begin by talking about the big story, right? The big fucking story that broke out with Harvey Weinstein, right? A lot of people came out, a lot of actresses, big name actresses came out with their stories of sexual assault at the hands of Harvey Weinstein, right? And this is not something that was, like, new, right, to a lot of people. This was something that had been going on for decades, right? I think the earliest one that I remember was, like, Gwyneth Paltrow in the 90s, right? Like, at the peak of her career, right? And that took me by surprise, right? She's a huge actress, you know? And if I'm not mistaken, she's also, like, comes from, like, Hollywood royalty, right? So if, like, the pinnacle of, like, Hollywood could, like, was subjected to this abuse, right, I can only imagine what happened to everyone else, right? What everyone else had to face.
Yeah, that was, I guess, I feel like there's not only that story, there's been a lot of other stories like this ever since that story broke, but that one, I think, was... Yeah, big because of that, and also because it included so many women. It wasn't just, you know, one actress. It was a lot of women over the years. And we were talking, I mentioned how he's, like, in rehab right now. Or, I mean, whatever the fuck that means, right?
Yeah.
And how, he denied it, but then admitted he has a problem with sex, but... I don't know, but then I guess one of the last actresses that came forward was Lupita, and I found it really interesting how he only replied to her accusation,
yeah,
but nobody else's.
Yeah, and that's right? Lupita Nyong'o, for people, for clarification, right? Academy Award winning black actress, right? She's dope as fuck. She came out with her, like, detailed account of abuse, right? And it wasn't just, like, a one-time thing. And that's something that people forget about, like assault, right? And that oftentimes it's somebody you know, in a lot of cases someone you trust, right? And also, it's not a one-time thing, right? So Lupita recounts, like, how she originally was invited to Harvey, like, his Weinstein's house, right? And he tried to abuse her then, and then continued to badger her, right, throughout her her early career. Right? And it took her a lot for her to, like, break out of that, right? And it's something, and it's always about power, right? That's something that people forget, right? Because there's other, you know, abusers, right? Who, you know, Harvey Weinstein, like someone mentioned, I remember he's like an old, like an aging problem, right? But there's also, like, younger abusers who are still doing this, right? And who sometimes get a pass because they're considered attractive or things like that, right? And so it's important to note that it's, like, not just about sex, it's also about power, right? Harvey Weinstein is one of the most, powerful men in Hollywood, and he wanted to assert this, on tons of young actresses, right? This didn't only include, Gwyneth Paltrow and Lupita Nyong'o, it also included other big stars like Angelina Jolie, right? And so when we talk about, abuse, we have to talk about power, right? And it's not just Hollywood, right? So another thing, too, that happened, it's every industry, you know, right? Every fucking industry. Ever since then, there's been people from all sorts of industries and top-notch, like, government, right? So George W. H. Bush, right? Old W.S. father, right? It has come out recently that he's been, like, routinely, like, grabbing women's butts when it's time for, like, a photo with him, or, like, when it's, like, when he's, like, talking in meetings with women. And he always tells them, like, dirty jokes, too, right? And so it's been reported that at least two actresses have come out with their stories of harassment at his hands, right? And other than that, there's, like, also, like, it's also affected, like, fashion, right? Teri Richardson was recently banned from Vogue.
Yeah, go on. I was just gonna say, who's been, like, an ongoing problem. Yeah. That's still, like, this man still has a fucking job. But that's, like, a lot of people, like, a lot of men, they've done this for, like, years and years and years. And even when the accusations come up, like, they still have fucking careers.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rare that they don't. And the ones that they don't, the men that I feel that have been abusers that aren't as successful are going to be black men, like black actors, black rappers, black celebrities, because they're black and it's racism. But when it's white men, it's more normalized and it's more accepted. And that's not to say that black men don't get backlash either, but it's mostly white men that get that pass.
Yeah.
So Teri Richardson has been brought up recently again because it says Teri Richardson has been barred from working with all Condé Nast titles, which include Vogue. So I guess that's supposed to be a big thing. Richardson has been dogged for years by allegations of sexual exploitations of models, something he has always denied. Then yesterday, also Twiggy Ramirez, who was the bassist for Marilyn Manson, it says, was accused of rape by former girlfriend and Jack Off Jill lead singer Jessica Adams. Manson has since come out to announce that Ramirez will no longer be a part of his band. Then we had, let's see. This 14-year-old actor from Stranger Things, Finn Wolfhard, has left his talent agency after his agent was accused of sexual assault. So those are just some of the stories. Who else? Oh, Alice Glass.
Oh my God.
So Alice Glass from Crystal Castles, I believe it, I don't, was it yesterday or the day before, made a statement about why she left Crystal Castles back, what was it, 2000, I want to say it was 2015, when she left Crystal Castles and why. And it was a post on her website, an in-depth piece about detailed abuse from Ethan, who is the other co-founder of Crystal Castles.
Yeah.
And so I think that was really shocking because they were in a band. She's known him since she was 15, and this abuse has been ongoing since then, since she's met him. He was like older. He was years older than her, and she was 15. And that's how, like, they met, based on abuse of him abusing her. And they were in a fucking band together, and they're big, and everybody knows who they are. And it just, like, it's like, wow. Like, that had been going on for this whole time, and no one fucking knew. I'm sure some people knew, obviously, but not, like, their fans. And so it's been really fucking shocking. And Crystal Castles is actually on tour right now. And so then he canceled all...
Yeah, no, so I came up during, like, that electro, like, scene kid wave, right? And Crystal Castles was, like, huge, right? They were, like, the it in some ways, right? And I remember when they broke up initially, like, they were, like, they had discussed, like, how they had, like, fights, right? And so there was whispers of this, right, of this abuse early, but, like, it wasn't until recently that, the Crystal Castles announced that they were, like, touring again, that, like, it was made, like, aware of this abuse, right? And, like, it's, like, strategic, the ways in which bands, like, or, like, artists that face abuse, like, plan out projects, right? So even if these stories had been told, right, people will wait until that drama has, like, that, like, hoopla has, like, settled down before they release things, right? And so I'm glad that Alice Glass, like, came forward as Crystal Castles was picking up again, right? Because I know I kept myself and a lot of friends from, like, buying tickets to see this you know, this abusive asshole, right? And so there's that, but I also like want to note the ways in which abuse is like not only sexual, right? It's also like mental and emotional. And one big band that has been, specifically a Chicanx band, right, that has been called out for their abuses, like Las Cafeteras, right?
Yes.
And they're touring again right now, too. And I know Yvette of Las Cafeteras, she, like, left, right, because she faced abuse at the hands of the men in the band. And if mm-hmm. you're aware of Las Cafeteras, you know, they're, like, a band that preaches, like, social justice and shit, right? Like, that is, like, what their whole thing is about. Right. But still, like, men gonna men, right? And so these men still perpetuated abuse, right? I remember Yvette put out that, like, they would, you know, make fun of her appearance. They would abuse her emotionally, mentally, and minimize, like, the work that she had put in, right? And so she eventually, like, left this band, right? Even though she had, like, close ties with the band members, they were, like, some of them are part of her family, right?
Yeah, and Las Cafeteras is, I remember when that all happened, because I had actually, I feel it was like 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 2, on Chicanisma, I had posted like an article about them, their band, and I was like, oh, they're really cool. And then they had also, two of their members, I don't know their names, but two of them had gone on this show on Comedy Central, and I forget what the show's called, but they were talking about the difference between
the word Chicanx.
Latinx and Hispanic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember? I don't know if you saw it. You remember? And I thought, oh, yes. Like, that's really cool. Like, it was really cool. And I remember posting it on Chicanisma, and people were like, no, like, you know, this happened. And so, like, I was like, oh, wow. And I took it off. And then there was, like, all these articles about their history and what they did. But, like, I feel like people were mad about it when it happened. But right now it's like, oh, everything's cool, and people are still supporting them. And I wish, you know, like, I wish that's how we feel. I think around that time they actually came to El Paso, and I was like, oh yeah, that would have been cool for me to see them, but definitely not anymore. Like, I cannot support that, you know, especially because I think they denied the whole thing. Like, they never really acknowledged it. I think they tried to sue her, I think, at one point, or tried to silence her. Like, it was just a mess. And
yeah, it was a fucking wreck, right? So because, like, they are, like, all social justice-y and shit, right? They were like, we're gonna hold ourselves accountable and have, like, a town hall meeting to address these issues. But that never happened, mm-hmm. actually. They, like, always postponed it. And
of course.
Because, like, of what I mentioned earlier, right? They, like, postponed it until people forgot about it, right? And a lot of people mm-hmm. did forget about it, right? They still maintain their fan base to pretty much, right? And they still got these bookings to talk about, like, what Chicanx means and Latinx means and all these shits, right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, like, I remember they put out this song after Trump won, they put out a song about, like, pro, like, Latinxes, pro-Mexican or some shit. And they were, like, mm-hmm. imagining a world without hate or something like that, right? And I'm like, I think I commented on one of the things, one of the posts, like, I wonder if they can imagine a world without abusing people, right? And I think I got banned from that, from that publication.
Wow. Yeah, but definitely. And going back to, I guess, I just also recently, I think yesterday, posted about another article about R. Kelly. I'm throwing this out there because it just came to my head, but I feel like also talking about, like, people who expose men and who the victims are, right? Because are the victims white, or are they black? Are they poor? Like, are they considered valuable of protection? And with R. Kelly, he, like, I still don't understand how, like, R. Kelly has a fucking career. I really don't. Because these allegations, they're not fucking you. He married Aaliyah when she was 15. Like, he's a fucking pedophile. And so I, like, still am like, why? Like, why does he still have a career, and why are we people still trying to act like all of these women are liars and all of these women just want attention? And it's not just women, it's girls, right? It's like older women, and it's like really young girls. Like, he was on fucking video. Like, there's a video evidence of him abusing a 14-year-old girl, and he got away with it because they couldn't find the 14-year-old girl to testify. Like, that was it. That's the only reason he got off. And people still want to be like, I feel like these women are lying.
Yeah, I never knew that was the reason.
Yeah, that was the reason because it, like, there, that's the only fucking reason. And even if that wasn't the reason, like, you know, it's just, I just feel like if we're going to be outraged, we need to be outraged by all of these men, not just like a selected few or, oh, because this victim isn't what I consider. I feel like they're lying and they're not worth protecting for whatever reason. And then on, I think we already talked about this in another episode about Woody Allen's fucking rapist ass too in his new movie. And so, I don't know. I feel like these are all the stories that have been on my timeline. Just another day, another someone. And not just in the, not just celebrities. There have been, you know, women that I know personally, or I'm sure all, we have one friend who has posted a story about their own account of sexual abuse, yep, of rape, yeah, of physical abuse, etc. And it's like all of these women have been abused, but all, like no one knows any man near that is that they're friends with that is an abuser.
Yeah,
and it's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I remember because
It goes, and then it's just like all of a sudden all these men are like, I stand with women, I support women, but I'm not gonna say shit when I see it, and I'm gonna pretend like my friend isn't an abuser, and I'm just gonna, you know, look away, like fucking Ben Affleck's ass, how he came out with like that pose. I'm like, shut the fuck up and go talk to your brother. And
yeah, oh,
it's just
yes,
like I men are so, even in like times like these, men just need to shut the fuck up. Like, I don't even want to hear, like, oh, I'm a feminist, I support feminism, and I wouldn't do that. And, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, shut the fuck up, because no one believes you. We don't believe you.
Yeah, no, we don't believe shit, right? Like, you're right, like, everybody, like, it was us seeing, like, women, right, like, come out with their stories of abuse, right? But, like, no men knew an abuser, right? And what I did see, though, was, like, men being, like, it was, like, trying to absolve themselves of culpability, right? And they were like, oh, not me, right? I think this, some fucking trash men were like starting some hashtag of like, you know, it wasn't me, right? And I was like, no, bitch, it is you, right? Because you contribute to rape culture by like not calling out your friends when they make rape jokes, right? Like not like calling your friends out when they like are starting to be abusive pieces of shit, right? Like, so it is them, right? And that reminds me, before I forget, right, one of the things that, like, I tweeted about recently, well, like, in the last few months, right, was after the R. Kelly allegations came out, right, it came out that, like, his ticket sales and his album sales had gone up, and that...
They went
and
up?
I was like, yep.
Wow.
They had gone up. People were buying more of his shit. And that, like, reminded me, like, this is one of the reasons that, like, survivors don't come out, especially when they're, like, abuser or someone who is respected, right? And that's because oftentimes people don't rally around the survivors, they rally around the abuser, right? Because I think specifically within some communities of color, we're taught this like lie about like machismo, where like men have the power, but they're also somehow fragile at the same time, right? So we have to protect them from all this outside like attacks, right? Even though like they might deserve, you know, being, you know, persecuted for being abusers, right? So R. Kelly sales went up, and I'm just like, this doesn't surprise me. This is like straight up from you know, this is textbook abuser shit, right? But yeah, no, and so people don't care about that because his victims have all been, you know, black women, right? And black girls, you know? And it's also about like, you know, who society seems like is worthy of like deserving our advocacy, right?
Yeah, and especially with also like brown men who are abusers, it's always like people defending them on the basis of like, well, they're oppressed by like white men and white supremacy, and so if we call out brown men, then we're contributing to their oppression. And it's like, oh, well, it's because they've gone through colonization, so we have to be like super nice to them, and they just don't know any better, and blah blah blah. And it's fucked up because like I've been having these conversations because of all this that's been happening in the media, and just kind of evaluating how this this is also happening in my life. And also, like, it's fucked up being in community organizing spaces, right, with abusive men, because it's like we're trying to do this work of whatever community work that we're doing, and there's like fucking men here who are abusers, and then there's people who defend them on the basis of like their work. Like, fuck their work.
Yeah,
and
absolutely, right?
And I always tell people that
fuck their work.
Yeah, I always tell people that I am like in spaces, community organizing spaces with, that I'd rather have like dedicated women who do the work. And like women that do the work, like it's really hard for us because a lot of us are mothers. We work, we go to school, but at the end of the day, like we get shit done. And then like these weak ass men show up and they're like, oh, I'm going to do this like one little shit, even though I'm an abuser and everyone's going to praise me. So I'd rather have all these amazing women doing work than allowing abusive pieces of shit in this space just because we need them or we think we need them. Like, no. And it's also like, if we don't call out men, then they feel entitled to this space. And then it's like a repetitive thing because it's allowed. They're like, I'm going to do this, but you know, people know that I'm woke and people know, you know, that I'm like from Aztlan. So it's cool, you know. Like, yeah. So, like, no, fuck you and fuck your work. Like, bye.
Absolutely. Yeah, fuck your work, you fucking predatory-ass activist. Fuck your work. I also want to discuss, like, how this is, like, also not only, like, an organizing spaces, but also, like, in our homes, right? In our families, right? So, you know, when we talk about abuse, you have to note the fact that, like, you're most likely to be face assault from someone you know. And someone you trust than anyone else, especially like a partner, right? Mm-hmm. Or a family member. And so this is like hella replicated in Latinx households, right? When we have that creepy uncle, right? And our family doesn't like exile him, right? Or get rid of him, and instead tells like young girls to like cover up, right? And to like, shape their lives around these abusive men, right? Instead of getting rid of them, right? And so this is something that I've talked about before, but it's like this is where like sometimes chisme as survival has worked for us, right? So instead of like, you know, talking about our stories of survival, sometimes we like just trust others with these stories, right? Instead of coming out publicly with them, right? So we're like, hey, don't go around like this person, right, this creepy uncle, because they're abusive, right? And like we form like tunnels, like communication tunnels of like protection, right? Because patriarchy, machismo protects men, and like let leaves the rest of us out to figure out shit on our own, right? Figure out how to survive.
Yes, and I love that chisme survival. And it also goes back to like, you know, women being seen as like all we do is talk and gossip and we don't care about anything else, but it's like, what are we talking about? Why do we need to talk about these things with other women? And in our households, like I think, like, I don't know, it's fucked up. Like, I think with me growing up, I saw a lot of physical abuse in my family, and it was always like one of my tios that did that to one of my tias, and it wasn't like it was like, you know, in cases of domestic violence where people are like, well, yeah, it's bad, but also why is she still there? Also, So yeah, he was wrong, but you know, blah, 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 blah. And, actually like it was two years ago. One of my cousins, actually, he murdered his wife in, like, a murder-suicide, and it was, like, a domestic, you know, abuse thing. And I remember the first time that I heard that he had physically assaulted his wife, my reaction was, like, to cut him off, right? He lives in Juarez, and so we didn't really have a lot of, we didn't really see each other that often, because at that time I really wasn't going to Juarez a lot. But when I did see him, I was just, like, nope, you know, like, just, I can't. And the rest of my family was kind of like, yeah, like it was bad, but at the same time I felt like they were like, well, why is she still around? Well, you know, kind of like justifying it. And so like that, it had to come to that, you know. And it was like also being at the other end, because you know, when we read stories about abuse and domestic violence, it's like, at least me, I obviously always empathize with the victim and the survivors, but it was like being on the other side of like,
yeah,
the perpetrator side, and how like that was like fucked up on its own, because my family was grieving for like their brother, for their son, but their son was an abuser, you know. Yeah. And so it was a really fucked up situation for me, you know, mentally and emotionally. Yeah. And it's just really ugly how, like, our own families are,
yeah,
like, look away instead of stepping, yeah, in and saying, what do we need to do to help this person? Not the perpetrator, regardless of their family, but, like, the victim and the survivor.
Yeah. And there's a lot to unpack there, too, right? So, something that people, there's a lot of things, right? So, first of all, this whole, like, victim blaming thing of, like, why is she still there? Like, first of all, that needs, mm-hmm, to, like, fucking just fucking stop. Like, full stop, right? Like, Latinx is, like, we and, like, and society as a whole, we need to cut that shit. Because it's not, first of all, it's victim blaming. Second of all, it, like, doesn't take into consideration that, like, patriarchy and capitalism often keep, like, women, right, in abusive situations, right? There's no economic opportunities, right, and for them, especially if, you know, they're in traditional households where oftentimes, like, women are only allowed to be, like, amas de casa, right, housewives, right? So, like, mm-hmm, after, say, like, 20 years of marriage, right, like, what is a woman supposed to do, right? There's often very few resources for them, and if abusers are, like, a lot of, you know, folks, one of the tactics of abuse is to cut them off from their friends and their family, right? So they cut them off from community, right? So they don't have these things to reach out to, right? So that these are things that, like, play into why, like, sometimes women stay, right? Or survivors stay. I do want to honor that, of course, like, not all survivors are women, but most survivors are women, right? But also another thing that, like, people don't talk about is that, like, when we face abuse, a lot of the times, like, our body goes into, like, survival mode, right? And so, like, it releases, like chemicals, right, to help us, like, make sense of the trauma, right? In this case, right, our abuse leads to, like, a release of, like, oxytocin, I think it's called, the chemical, right? And that's, like, to help us, like, get over, like, the fact that we went over trauma, right? And so what this chemical does also is that, like, it kind of prohibits, like the buildup of memory, right? And it increases feelings of bonding, right? So this is why sometimes, like, people, like, develop, like, a Stockholm syndrome, right? And also why a lot of the times when we're victims, right, when we survive, we often forget a lot of the things that happened, right? So because our body does that to protect us from the trauma, right? And so one of the things that Raquel Savage, sex therapist, recommends is that, like, if you're facing abuse, if you face a type of violence, to write it down, to have a diary, right? So that you know that you weren't imagining it, right? And that's like a tool that you can use to, like, to ground yourself, right? If you're surviving, right? Because it's never your fault, right? Like, your memories are always valid, right? And you deserve community and you deserve resources.
Yes, and another thing about people that say, well, why didn't she leave? Why didn't they leave? And it's like, when the majority of time when women do leave, when they are able to, if they are able to leave, a lot of the times, you know, they end up dead because the partner, the perpetrator, the abuser goes, you know, that they go and look for them, even if it's like, I think a lot of women, I saw, like, an article where it's, like, a lot of women who are victims of domestic violence, their partners always go to their workplace. Like, that's where the majority of murders happen for victims of domestic violence, is that their abusers always go to their workplace. And, like, we tell women to get out, but we don't offer them resources. We tell women to get out, but we don't do anything for them. And then we don't hold the perpetrators accountable. So what are women going to do when they leave? If they do leave, if they have the resources to leave, if they have a support system to leave, a lot of the times, yeah, like, it's too late. A lot of the times the abuser still shows up at their workplace, still stalks them. Like, it's like a cycle of, like, the law never holding perpetrators accountable, communities never holding the abusers accountable, because if these abusers didn't have any kind of support, anyone backing them up, where would, like, you know what I mean? Where would they be? And that's not to say that they wouldn't still do it, but it's just, like, people kind of normalize it and then victim blame. And then, yes, we're also mad. We're mad at anything the survivor does. Like, it's still, like, yeah, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do it sooner? Why blah, 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 blah? And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? You're not doing shit, so shut the fuck up. Yep, like, that's pretty much what it is.
Yep. So. We're mad at everyone except for the actual fucking abuser, right? Okay. And so with all this conversation about like sexual assault, like being in the news cycle, right? It's encouraged a lot of folks to talk about their own experiences, right? And so recently there's been a revival of Tarana Burke's hashtag that she created called Me Too, right? Hashtag Me Too. To show that like sexual assault happens more commonly than we think, right? And so it was people detailing either like the entirety of their experiences of survival or simply just saying Me Too, right? Like you have experienced sexual assault and me too, right? And so this hashtag was revived primarily by Rose McGowan, who a lot of people seem to like not remember except for like us old folks. She was like an actress in like the 90s and early 2000s. She like is most noted for like replacing someone on Charmed, right? And then effectively kind of like ruining the show. Yeah, so Charmed is like a early 2000s show about like witches or whatever. So yeah, so Rose McGowan revived the hashtag because she like talked about her own experiences of assault at the hands of Harvey Weinstein. Yeah, so there was that. And a lot of people came forth with their accounts, right? Which made for like a pretty triggering like timeline for a while, right? So a lot of folks like myself like decided to like kind of like step away from the timeline, like especially as people who consistently talk about sexual assault on their platforms, right? And so because of this revival and like Rose McGowan's like outspokenness about it, right? People were attributing the hashtag to her, right? They were like saying that she created it, right? While erasing Tarana Burke's like work, right? She had been doing survivor advocacy for a long time now, and this hashtag was a result of her labor, right? And so it like once again was like an example of how like of how white feminists like co-opt like terminology, movements, you know, epistemologies of like women of color, primarily black women, right?
Yes, which is not new at all. They do that all the fucking time. Specifically with this, yes, it was being, I think it was at first, she was just speaking on her own history and her own story and her own experience with sexual assault at the hands of him. But then it turned, you know, obviously into just a really messy thing on her behalf, because aside from co-opting that, and regardless if that was her intention, of course, or not, she started tweeting some really insensitive, racist shit. Like, she had... So she was, like, on Twitter and on Facebook constantly retweeting and tweeting about sexual assault and misogyny and sexism, and all of that is great. But then she had said... she had replied to Chris Gardner about kind of like a joke that he made about everything that was happening, and she said, "This is rich, famous Hollywood, white male privilege in action. Replace the word women with the N-word. How does it feel?" So, white women always tend to do that. I think, compare being a woman to being a black person, which is, not only does it erase black women altogether, but it's also like, what the, And then she, I guess she obviously got called out for that, and then she deleted that tweet, and then she kind of said that she was high when she said that. And, like, yeah, so I like,
I mean, listen, I don't do the marijuana, but, like, I think I've had, like, one marijuana in the last couple of years, but, like, I don't think I've ever gotten high and, like, tweeted, like, some blatantly like racist shit, right?
And then she also I'm reading the screenshots of shit that, so then that was whenever that was, and then a few days later Ellen DeGeneres tweeted, "Right now in Mississippi, gay people can be refused service and trans people can refuse treatment. Mississippi, you deserve better." So this was Ellen DeGeneres, who is also problematic, but we're not talking about her. We're talking about, she tweeted that, and then Rose McGowan replied to Ellen DeGeneres saying,
Right now in America, birth control is being taken away and abortion is almost illegal. Speak for women as well, please. Huge platform. And I'm just like, there's trans women, there's queer women, first of all. Like, it's just like trying to take the attention from her, from like cishet white women.
Yeah.
Or just cis women in general, or, well, just to make it all about herself, right? And that's, like, what white feminism, liberal feminism is, like, me. And, like, we're not going to talk about anything else, and we're going to compare my struggles to these struggles, and we're also going to co-opt your movements and make it about us. And so what turned out, like, at the beginning of her just, like, being outspoken about the abuse turned into just another case of fucking, you know, white women. I have one more thing. So Rose McGowan has always been kind of like this, because I never saw Charmed. Is that what it was called? Or Bewitched? Or no, Bewitched is another.
Yeah. Bewitched no, it's like Charmed. Some other thing. Yeah. All witches, but Charm was about the three sister witches.
I never saw that show, but I know what show it is. But I
it was pretty hot, like the first few seasons until Prue died. And then it just kind of went to shit. They killed Shannon Doherty, who played Prue, for being hella, like, problematic or whatever. Or, violent towards her co-stars. And then the show kind of went to shit because of Rose McGowan. Anyway, thank continue. You for
that. The way I know Rose McGowan, I think, is through Planet Terror. And that was, like, the movie where she had, like, the gun for the leg. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was, like... Yeah.
Oh, Planet yeah, that's Terror. Her name. So yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like she's been like this icon of, and then she like dated Marilyn Manson, so she has always been like this like edgy, like cool. I don't even know how to describe her. Like she's like this edgy girl. And then I remember like I don't know. Like I always thought she was really cool, right? And so like throughout the years, I've seen like articles about how she's like tries. She's like the perfect example of a liberal like. And a white feminist, because she thinks, I feel like people think she's like radical and she's like I'm a feminist and you know all this shit, but then she's very like racist. She's also transphobic as fuck, which surprised me, and I don't know why it surprised me, to be honest, because I mean cis women, cis people, we're all just shit anyway, like all of us, and so like I don't know why I was surprised, but I felt because she's been like this, like I don't know if she's bi, I don't know if she is, but regardless, she's kind of been like, I'm a LGBTQ ally, right? Like, that's like her, you know, her shit. But then, this was this year in May, this is a tweet. She tweeted at Kendall Jenner.
Yeah, purposely misgendering Caitlyn Jenner, right? That's how, like, she's so, apparently she's like not only like a white feminist, right? But also like a TERF.
Yeah, she's a fucking TERF. She's racist. She's like all of those things. And it's not surprising.
And if you don't know what TERF means, it means trans exclusionary radical feminist. And it's like, oh, branch of feminism that arose kind of from like first and second wave feminism that don't think that trans women are women and that they don't deserve a place in feminism or women's spaces.
Yeah, yeah. So she, like I said, like we're talking, and I feel like we've talked about like white women and their bullshit, but it's not just, when we talk about TERFs, TERFs aren't just, they're not just white women, even though they're like, I feel like the example of it, you can be any color, any race, any ethnicity, and be a TERF. But, aside from Rose McGowan, I think...
Oh, so, I want to, like, unpack some things with Rose McGowan before we continue, sure. Right? Yeah, so, like, a couple of things, right? So, like, you know, she mentioned that, like, that one comedian, like, right, if he made a joke about using the N-word instead of using women, that would have caused an outrage, right? And so that's wrong because, like, that erases black women, right? And it's, again, like, us seeing explicitly, right, who her feminism is for, right? She's, like, she's a white woman first type of feminism, right, that doesn't see race, which is ridiculous considering, like, you know, women of color are not just oppressed by, you know, misogyny, sexism, I mean, systemic sexism, etc. They're also oppressed by racism, right? And, you know, sometimes xenophobia too, right? And then when she, like, came at Ellen, right, she's erasing, like, queer women and trans women And also ignoring that sometimes, like, trans men also need, like, reproductive rights too, right? They're also erased part of this narrative, right? And so I recently found this this article by Luna Merbruja on everyday feminism, right? Which, you know, whatever, everyday feminism can be really basic, but this one's really good. This article's, like, really good. And it talks about, like, how trans women are also part of the reproductive rights, like, conversation, right? Even though we don't think about, like, trans women as people who can get pregnant, right? So, yeah, trans women can raise families, and trans women can have their own children, too, right? So, Luna Merbruja talks about how when she was 17, she began, like, hormone replacement therapy, right? And how that destroyed her dreams. She thought that would destroy her dreams of wanting to raise a family, right? Until she found out that, like, she could, like, bank her sperm, right? And so she talks about how, like, promoting, like, affordable and free sperm banking options can help trans women, like, have a family if they wanted to, right? Also, protecting trans women from violence is something else that we can do, right? Because, like, how are trans women going to raise families if they are, you know, like, murdered by, you know, society, right? And she also mentions the fact that, like, fight when trans people are being discriminated against when it comes to adoption and, like, fostering policies, right? Because they are often the most affected, right? They, for a variety of reasons, the state often thinks that they're, like, incapable parents, when, like, I've seen plenty of trans people raise perfectly good children, right? Like, being LGBT, specifically trans, doesn't, like, negate someone's ability to have and, like, raise a great child, right? And another thing, too, she mentions is that, like, to promote, like, gainful employment with benefits for trans people are some of the people that are have the hardest time finding employment due to so much discrimination, right? So all these things are things we can do to, like, center trans women in the discussion about, like, reproductive rights and, like, not be like Rose McGowan and other, like, white feminists, right? Like the one you were we were talking about, Masha from Pussy Riot. Right.
Yes, and Pussy Riot became, I guess, popular here, I'm assuming. I'm sure they were, like, popular in Russia, but here in the United States, I think, in, like, 2015, 2012, 2013, a few years ago, right? And so everyone was like, Pussy Riot, and they're so amazing, and they're from Russia. Where are they, like, I guess they're a band, right? This is the thing, like, this is what I was telling, we were talking about this earlier, that I think I mentioned it on Twitter, too. I never really got, like, into the hype of Pussy Riot, because I'm like, okay, you're white, whatever. But specifically because around that time, Marissa Alexander was going to be sentenced to 20 years in jail. So if a lot of you aren't aware of her case, it was in Florida, and she had shot a warning shot at her abusive partner, and even though Florida has the famous Stand Your Ground law, they still arrested her and were going to sentence her to 20 years. And I think she ended up doing, like, 1 year and then, like, or maybe, like, 2 years and got off, like, on probate. It was, like, this thing that she just had a newborn. It was, like, this really ugly case. And I remember Pussy Riot at that time, everyone was, like, focused on, like, their little fucking 2 year sentence, which I was just like, where is the outrage for this black woman? Like, all the feminists are just focused on Pussy Riot. And I think that's also why I was like, fuck Pussy Riot, like, I don't even care about them. But anyway, yeah. Like, I guess they're still around, or, like, recently I actually saw one of their music videos, and it was, like, really turfy, too. I don't know if turfy's, like, a good term to use, but it was, like just turf shit.
I don't know if turfy works.
It was just, like, turf shit. And
they were just turfing it up. Just, like, straight up, just period blood everywhere, just, like...
Yeah. It was so bad.
Vagina hats.
Oh, yes, it was so bad, and I was like, oh, I'm glad I never got into that shit. But, so recently, yeah. Though, I, like, a few days ago, it came out that she, one of the girls from Pussy Riot, is dating Outright...
The leader
of the Outright, or... Of some
of the Russian, like, branch of, like, one version of the alt-right, right? So I think it's called, like, God's Will is the name of that little group. Not little group. It's a big group, right? In Russia, of, like, white supremacists who are, like, hyper like religious and hyper like staunchly anti-LGBT, right? And so,
and it's trying to be like passed off as this like romantic, like liberal fucking love story of like, despite our differences, we are in love. And even though I'm a feminist and he's a racist homophobe, we can still make it work. And I'm just like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is some white shit, like some white liberal feminist shit.
And like, and like, first I want to note a lot of things, right? Where do I start? She's dating this Masha woman from Pussy Riot, is dating a Nazi, right? From, you know, far right. His name is, like, Entio. And he's, like, violently anti-LGBT, right? Like, he promotes, like, LGBT folks getting incarcerated, getting murdered, getting tortured. And he's, like, in some ways, like, espouse that, right, with his followers. And when we talk about, like, anti-LGBT violence, it's horrible everywhere, right? Of course, we should always advocate against violence. We should also note that, like, in Russia right now, shit is, like, rough. Like, it's not, like, the same, like, LGBT antagonism that we're seeing in the U.S., right? People are getting incarcerated and tortured and murdered simply for existing and being out as LGBT folks, right? So this, her relationship with him is happening in this political moment where she is seeing her LGBT peers being persecuted by her boyfriend, essentially, right? And what she does, instead of, like, holding him accountable or, like, saying, like, fuck this dude, right? Like, fuck Nazis, right? Which is, like, I think the right thing to do, right? She is saying things that, like, I'm not interested in forcing him to change, right? And so I'm just like, this is some, like, hyper, like, white woman bullshit, right? Because it's like, she's all for LGBT. She, like, claims to be for LGBT folks. When it's time to put her money where her mouth is, like, she's fucking a Nazi, right? Like, just don't fuck Nazis. It's, like, not that hard. Just, like, don't fuck Nazis. I trust you. There are hotter men. Right? Men are trash, right? Like, let's not negate that ever. But there's men who are not Nazis. And it's not that hard to find one. And to, you know, fall in love with one and, like, to hook up with one, right?
It's really hard. It's really hard, apparently. <It's> like...
I mean, probably, I don't know how, you know, shit might be different in Russia. Like, there'd be Nazis everywhere. You just gotta fuck a Nazi, apparently, in Russia. Especially when you're, like, a high-profile feminist. Sarcasm. But, like, one of the things that folks, like, have said, right, that it's, like, this is why it's important to move beyond, like, you know, second-wave feminist politics of, like, you know, my body and my rules, right? Because then it talks about, like, womanhood on, like, an individual scale, right? As opposed to, like, trying to like, defend all women, right? And so what she says when she's dating, like, this Nazi is, like, well, I can do whatever I want with my body. I don't care if that means, like, essentially promoting, like, you know, white nationalism and anti-LGBT shit, right? Because what she's saying is that, like, it's okay. He is not anti-feminist because he is respecting my body, right? And that's fine as long as he doesn't... it just doesn't matter if he doesn't respect the bodies of other people, right?
It's like... when we're talking about white women, like, they can be inclusive and they do know, like, things. They just choose not to when it's convenient for them, right? Or, like, when they get called out, or when, like, it's like an afterthought, like, it has to be addressed. And even when it's addressed and called to their attention, they're still very hesitant. Like, it's just, but again, like, when we're talking about white women, and it's not just white women, it's cis women too. Cis women of all races, of all ethnicities, of all colors. And it's also, I feel, again, or, like, I guess another point is that you don't have to be white to be a white feminist.
Yep.
Because I always talk about that a lot, that I used to be a white feminist, and my introduction to feminism was through white feminism. And I was, like, 16, so I didn't really, you know, I, like, discovered it through music.
Yeah.
Through, like, white punk rock music. And it was, Pussy, like, Riot? Being on... It was like the Riot Girl movement, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to, like, eventually
teach myself, like, or actually not teach myself, but actually a lot of just following, like, black women, black feminists online taught me a lot about, like, white feminism and, like, race and intersections and stuff, etc. But yeah, I was a white feminist for, like, years, and given I was 16, right? Like, I was 16 and, like, to my early 20s I was a white feminist, and I'm fucking, like, brown, and I never even understood how that intersected with it. Like, I thought, like, race and feminism were, like, two separate things, that I experienced things, like, it, you know. And that's, like, a whole, like, long ass conversation that I'm not going to get into, but it is, like, we need to hold ourselves accountable, and it's always, we can always grow. Like, I think everyone's kind of scared to say, well, I fucked up and I said this, and, like, okay, we all do. Like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And the thing is, with a lot of these white celebrities, with a lot of these cis celebrities, these cis women, these white women, like, they just, they don't want to admit that they're wrong. They don't want to apologize. They kind of want to justify what they said. They want to make it about them. Then they make themselves a victim. And it's just like, why do we need to do all that? Like, you don't need to do all that. Just, yeah, you know, do better. It's very simple.
Yeah. It's a cycle of, like, white women's fragility, right? Yeah, and I, again, like, in case, I don't know if we made it clear, right, but you, like, white feminism is just, like, basically, like, this feminism that is, like, only about, like, white people, right, or women only, right, and it excludes, you know, women of color, trans women, the most, right, and it sees, like, gender as, like, the ultimate, like, and, like, the only oppression, without seeing, you know, everything else, right, like class and race, right, and cis privilege and things like that. And it's funny to me that you mentioned that you, like, your introduction to, like, feminism was through, like, the Riot Girl thing, right? Because automatically I think about Alice Bag, right, who's one of my Chicana idols, right, and how she's, like, constantly fighting that narrative, right, and she's like, I was here all along, like, I was queer and
a brown woman. And so for those that aren't familiar, like, the Riot Girl movement was, like, a punk rock feminist movement in, like, late 80s, early 90s. So it was, like, a bunch of, like, middle-class white women who were in bands, right? Like, Bikini Kill, Bratmobile, Sleater-Kinney. And their music was about feminism, right? Very white feminism. It was just about, like, patriarchy and misogyny. But it wasn't inclusive to, like, women of color, to black women, right? But that was my introduction, because I was like, wow, this is so cool, and I listen to punk, and so, like, that was, like, really empowering for me, even though they were white, because I didn't think about that. I just thought about, like, oh, we're both, like girls, and, like, this is so cool. And so Alice Bag is, like, a Chicana punk rocker who was in The Bags, right?
Yeah.
Of course. I don't know if it was called Alice Bag and The Bags. It's just The Bags. And so there's, like, all these articles of, like, people trying to say that she was part of the Riot Girl movement. Yeah. And she's always like, no, like, I've been here, like, we've, you know, my, like, Chicana ass has been here singing about this, like, even before the Riot Girl movement. But, like, no one paid attention to, like, these brown women that were, like, singing these, like, amazing lyrics that were about race, that were about, like, being brown women. Everyone kind of, but people were familiar with, like, the Riot Girl movement, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and the thing is, like, I didn't even know who Alice Bag was until, like, 2 or 3 years ago via, like, the internet now and, like, Chicanisma. Mm. And it's fucked up, because when I think about, like, how, like, my introduction to feminism was through Riot Girl, like, through Bikini Kill and those bands, and then also through, like, the narrative of, like, you know, white women that got us the right to vote, and, like, these, like, very whitewashed, right? And I feel like I didn't know who Sandra, well, like, I had read House on Mango Street, but outside of House on Mango Street, there was, like, I didn't know the feminist Sandra Cisneros, right? Like, even though that book is feminist in itself, like, I didn't see her as, like, a feminist icon at the time. Mm. I didn't, you know, I didn't know, like, Chicana writers. I didn't know, like, Latina writers, Latina feminists. I didn't listen to Alice Bag, and I feel like it was all just, like, white shit. And it's fucked up, because I'm like, how the fuck, like, now I'm like, how the fuck do I even relate to that? Like,
yeah.
I don't. And so, like, we're out here, you know, like, brown women are out here, Latinas, Chicanas, we've been, like, they've been around for, like, ever, but it's, like, you have, like, we're not, like, it wasn't easily accessible to us as, like, these white women were.
Yeah.
And these white women themselves happen to be, the majority of time, like, fucking racist. So it's, like, you know, like, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
But you know what? Not, they're not part of the Riot Girl movement, but let's just stop. Like, we should just stop talking about white women.
Yeah. Like, well, we started talking about Alice Bag, right? And, like, punk. And, like, the legacy that she's kind of built for women of color, I think, right? In punk, right? And I think that one of the people who, you know, has followed in her vein, right, of, like, being, like, liberated and, like, in punk and, like, also women of color has been Karen O, right, of the Gay Yes, which has been one of our favorite bands, right?
Yes, Karen O. Like, we wanted to talk about Karen O because recently it's like the anniversary of Fever to Tell, which is her first album, which is an amazing fucking album.
Yes.
And so Karen O, if you're not familiar with Karen O or the Yeah Yeahs, like, what are you doing? Where have you been?
Yeah.
Like, get on it. I feel like everyone knows who the Yeah Yeahs are, but maybe you know who they are. Maybe, like, I'm sure everyone's heard the song Maps. But you, if you, that's all you know, then you need to, like, just do your homework and go listen to them.
Yes. But
Karen O is the lead singer of the Yeah Yeahs. And so she is, she was born in Korea. She's Korean.
Yeah.
And she's just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
She's so, like, I don't know. I started listening to the Yeah Yeahs in, like, eighth grade. And I remember thinking, like, she's and I still think she's just so fucking cool. Like, she's just amazing. But as I listened to her, like, throughout high school, and I, like, listened to the lyrics and, like, understood them a little more, like, I was like, wow, like, she's talking about sex. Like, wow, she's singing like she's gonna have a fucking orgasm, and that's fucking awesome.
Okay.
And that's fucking amazing, and I think that's sexy, and I think that's powerful, because at the same time, she's, like, fucking vulnerable, and she's, like, can turn around and write about love and, like, heartbreak, and then she'll turn around and be like, fuck you, like,
yeah,
and, like, spit in people's faces, and, like, she was just, like, empowering in that way.
Yeah, so I actually didn't, like, I, her album came out when I was, like, I was in high school, too, and I was, like, way too into, like, other things at the moment to really pay attention to her. I didn't really find her until I was, like, 19, and, like, Scene was, like, the thing, right? Like, punk, art punk specifically, and, like, electro clash, like, that was the thing that we went out to, like, San Francisco to go dance to, and she was one of the big, like, and it's hard, and it's, like, difficult maybe to imagine for some folks to, like, go out to a club and, like, dance to punk, but, like, that's kind of what it was, like, in, like, the early, like, mid-2000s, early mid-2000s, and so I remember, like, being, like, oh, wait, this is, hearing some of her, like, real punk songs, I was, like, wait, this is, like, the Maps girl, like, singing, like, about, like, coming, right, like, and, like, singing like she's in mid-orgasm and holding, like, those notes for, like, all of 3 minutes, right, and then, like, I think my favorite all-time song from hers is Date with the Night, right, and, like, it's, like, a queer song, too, if you think about it. She talks about, like, going out on the town, but also, like, you know, taking brides, stealing brides, right, from the altar, and, like, just being such, like, a badass biatch, right, and so she also kind of disrupts this, like, white, like, punk narrative of, of, like, women in rock and roll, right, so I really love her. And she doesn't get enough respect, and I'm very, very blessed that I'll be getting to see her on Monday. Yeah. Oh, October 30th. Jealous. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so jealous. I saw her, I saw the Yeah Yeahs, I think it was in 2009. Mm. It was awesome. It was such a good show. Have you seen them before?
I have seen them twice before. Yeah. Actually twice in the same week. Because they rarely tour, right? So They announced two dates, and they were both nearish by, so I bought tickets to both, and I cried in both concerts, like, straight up just, like, bawled my eyes, even though it's, like, punk, and it's just, like, there was a part of me, like, in my early, like, 20s, like, in that age when I was, like, battling homelessness, that, like, Karen O and, like, Yeah Yeahs were, like, really big to me, and so I always was like, I want to see them live. Like, I have to see them live. Like,
And so part of me, like, was overwhelmed that, like, I was seeing this band that I didn't think I would live to see. And so that was, like, it was a lot for me. Yeah.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was actually listening. So I went to Phoenix this past weekend. So I was listening, you know, to a lot of old, you know, road trip. So I was listening to the Yeah Yeahs, and then I was, like, thinking about them. And when I was... So there was, like, a point in my life where, like, I was a stripper. And the very first song that I danced to was the Yeah Yeahs. And it was really funny because, like, I was, like, really nervous. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, what am I doing? And and we'll talk about that some other time. Yeah. But the DJ, you know, he was like, what music do you want me to put? And I was like, I don't know. And I was just, like, thinking, like, what song is, like, sexy to me? Like, what song, like, is gonna make me feel, like, like, powerful and, like, sexy? And, like, I still felt vulnerable, though. And, like, Karen O was, like, that's, like, what Karen O is to me. And I remember, like, dancing. And, like, the song I danced to was weird because it was, like, Gold Lion.
Yeah.
Because I think that was, like, the only song they had, like, on their right.
Yeah.
And I was, like, okay, that's fine. Like, Gold Lion's fine. But after that, I remember I would dance to, like, Date with the Night. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, my favorite thing because it was just, like, that song where, like, you don't give a fuck. Like, you don't even give a fuck if, like, you're dancing whack. Like, it's just, like, you just feel, like, free. And I feel like that's what Karen O is, that you're just, like, I'm powerful and vulnerable and sexy and, like, I don't give a fuck what you think.
Yeah.
And can still be, like, sad deep down and, like, cry.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. She's, like, all of those things.
Yeah. And I think Date with the Night, like, that does encapsulate that, right? It's like anger and sad and sexiness and, like, fun, but also, I think at its core, it's about freedom, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I've ever met her, and then now, because me and Ruben were like, let's go look at Karen O's, like, Instagram, and, like, just, like, because we're, like, just talking about her and how awesome she is, and, like, she's, like, we're talking about, like, she's a mom now, too,
yeah.
And it's, like, I feel like no one ever thought of Karen O, like, would be a mom, but even as a mom, she's so fucking punk rock, and she's still so, like, the same, and she's just, like, all of that, but now she's also a mother,
yeah.
Like me,
aye.
But I'm Karen O. You know, she's like an angel.
Yeah.
She's like a saint.
Yeah, she really is.
She really is.
All right. And so now that we've praised Karen O a lot, we will leave you with Date with the Night. And I hope y'all like this song as much as we love this song. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. And I hope y'all join us in the future.
Yes. Bye, bitches.
All right, bye, y'all. I got it.